Welcome to the Productivity Mastery Podcast, presented to you by myself, Stoyan Yankov, productivity and performance coach, keynote and TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Perform Methodology, and the book Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success. Join me on a journey to discover what some of the world's leading professionals do to be more productive, create peak performing teams, and build successful global companies. New episodes weekly. And now, enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Productivity Mastery. Today is episode 146. And actually, my guest today is somebody who was the guest of one of the first ever episodes nearly 3 years ago. I remember everybody pretty much, not just two of us, but everybody, probably the whole globe. Everybody was locked home in this global pandemic, not knowing what's next. And the term new normal actually was very trendy. You know, the new normal. We have to stay at home and try to figure out how to do things and navigate change, especially large companies had to speed up digital transformation and figure out a way to pay attention to different things and all the challenges and how do we take care of everybody, their mental health. So a lot of interesting things happened, I think, in the last 3 years. I've been closely keeping in touch with Samantha. We've been supporting each other. Actually, she's somebody I met back 2017 in Graz at a conference very dear to our hearts called 15 Seconds. Samantha, she's usually not just a speaker, she's hosting the main stage of the event, rocking the stage. And I had a chance to spend quite some time with her, learn from her. And every time I meet this person, I'm learning something new. I'm getting surprised in a positive way. So I just wanted to bring her back and now after 3 years to start and explore some questions. But before we get there, Sam, could you give the audience a bit of a context in terms of like what's on your mind, what's on your heart these days to begin with, and maybe afterwards if you can give us a short overview of your background.
Oh, two big, really big questions. What's in my mind and what's in my heart? Well, one of them actually is in terms of what's in my mind is I'm really curious about where the world is today and just what we're seeing from, I'm going to say, an environmental perspective, a political perspective. And that's all, that weighs on my mind just around we know that there's a lot of things that we need to do differently, yet for some reason we're not getting the positive traction. In fact, it sometimes feels like we're sliding backwards. And what's in my heart is actually related to that, is what can we do individually and collectively to actually have impact? And that is, to me, the reason I say my heart is because they're connected from an understanding of self first, to understand relationship with others, and then understand context and relationship with the world. But I think there's some really big things that we are challenged with and facing. And I don't know that we're moving fast enough. Yet in other ways, we are moving so fast. So how do we actually do that? And at the same time, there's a lot of hope, I'm going to say. A lot of hope and a lot of possibility.
Okay. And just so the audience can follow a little bit about your background and what you've been doing, and maybe bring us to the present moment. What are you focused on today?
So one of the things, and I'm probably going to make this a little bit broader than most people would be used to, but one of the things that I really believe is, and we all do this, when you look back, you can connect the dots and put them together so you understand why you've arrived at where you are. And we can only do that with hindsight. I don't think we have the capabilities of doing it with foresight. When we're thinking about our futures, we love to create and imagine what that could possibly be. But if I look back to even as a child, there's like a few key things that would have been very relevant around that shapes me today. I was sharing this yesterday with someone, is I was asked around who was a mentor when I was a child. And I thought, a mentor? And I wouldn't say that I had necessarily a mentor per se outside of my parents, of course, and a few teachers that I thought were amazing. But I remember as a child always really admiring Gandhi. And the quote had always stuck with me is, be the change that you want to see in the world. And also Mother Teresa, and specifically just that somebody would give up their life to be able to dedicate it to others, to be of service. And I'd say that that really resonated with me from a child into my teenage years. I've always volunteered and given back to the communities that I operate in, into my adulthood. But the reason that I mention this is because I was also talking to a childhood friend who reminded me of the fact that I used to take a chalkboard out of my basement and put it on the front yard. And I would play teacher, and I would teach all of the next door, like, neighbor kids anything I learned that week. So any new knowledge from my interactions with others, whether it was a girl that I went to school sometimes taught me Hindu, I'd teach that to them, whether it was something new that I learned in school, whatever that might be. And that's manifested in my adulthood too. And there's also like one third piece, which I've shared this story with quite a few people before, but when I was a child, about 8 years old, my mom decided that instead of taking all of my friends to a movie theater, because that was really expensive and they just couldn't afford it, my mom recreated a movie theater in our basement. And what she did is she went and got a projector and got some films. And when my friends arrived at the house, she gave them a ticket to the theater and they went to the basement. Oh yeah. And my dad ripped it and they went to the basement and they got their bags of popcorn and recreated that whole theater experience. But what it really taught me was how to be innovative and creative with very little, and that anything is possible if you try. And the reason I say, looking back on those stories, is if you actually look what happened to me as an adult, a few things is, one of my earliest jobs, which led me to one of my longest jobs, was I was running a not-for-profit organization because I wanted to have impact in the world. And through that, I was a recruiter at the time as well, so I had two jobs. But through that, I ended up leaving and starting my own company, which, by the way, failed miserably, but I learned a ton. But then I ended up working at Starbucks for 16 years because of one of my volunteers.
And How come?
Because honestly, I was at a point where I was sitting on my couch one day and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do and how I'm going to pay the mortgage this month. The not-for-profit that I was working for, all of the money that I was making from it, I was putting back into the not-for-profit because I felt guilty around taking money away from charities and organizations that needed it, even though I was a paid employee. And the business that we had started was failing miserably, even though it was a brilliant idea. And again, putting lots of money into the company. And one of my volunteers from Hope Volleyball happened to be working at Starbucks, the head of HR, and he called me and he had a role that was open for 4 weeks as a recruiter. And I said, I'd take it. And 16 years later, I was still with the company. And that was my biggest learning ground. And the reason that I bring up all of those childhood experiences is because if I actually look at how the dots connect, Starbucks is what I call my university of life. And Starbucks taught me a lot of things around how organizations can have impact in the world, how you can be an organization that does good. Also, Starbucks, really, one of the things I loved about it is I learned so much. And I learned a lot about leadership. I learned a lot about what good leadership looks like. I also had one or two experiences where I learned what kind of leader I did not want to be, but those were very few in between. And I would say the other part, too, that I really learned was being curious and learning and constantly learning and growing and sharing that knowledge and how important it is from an individual perspective, but also a leadership perspective. And that's really shaped where I've ended up is that a few years ago, I left Starbucks and my business unit was sold. And I think that was at the time, probably where we spoke about 3 years ago, where I was in this state of, I don't know what I want to do with the rest of my life. Still figuring that out, by the way.
To the young audience out there, the 21 years old listening, listen to Samantha. And by the way, Samantha is not alone. I speak to many, many people in all ages and everything. And you know, the truth is many people don't know what's next. Or maybe they do for a certain time and then they get lost, or they're like, okay, what's next for me? What's the next page? So if you're 21 years old freaking out that you don't know what you want to do with your life,
don't worry, because I'm 49 and I still don't know what I want to do with my life. But I've also, at the same time, I'm going to say I've reframed it a little bit, where it's not about knowing what I want to do. It's being a little bit more emergent. which I think I was, and that's why my career evolved the way that it did. But sometimes we get into these spaces, especially as our career grows, where we're like, I should be an expert in the marketing and I should know what I'm doing next. And all of these things that we think we need to do, versus where I'm kind of starting to land is that the one thing that is constant is going to be change. And as I experiment, I think that I might want to do one thing. Like, as an example, 5 years ago, I started working with some startups. And as I started working with them, I learned what I liked, what I didn't like, and I continued to pivot and try different things. When I left Starbucks, I did a master's in change. And after that, I'm doing my doctorate right now, which is crazy. I never thought I'd do that. But as I'm doing things, I'm learning that there's other things that I might want to try or experiment with. And I've realized I'm constantly in transition. So that is, there isn't a one thing that I'm going to do. There's one thing that I might do right now, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be the thing that I do 6 months or a year from now.
Seeing you from the outside, I feel like you are usually doing probably this one main thing, but you are involved in many different projects. For example, consulting on innovation, you are speaking at different events and conferences, you're leading workshops on leadership, actually really, really a great facilitator of experiences for teams. And you are also now pursuing your doctorate. So from the outside, it actually seems like you're doing a lot.
I would say that I'm doing a lot, but the way that I would phrase it is that I'm experimenting a lot. And part of the reason that I do lots of different things is, one, that's the way my brain works. It's how I learn, but it's also what gives me energy. I think if I was to do just one thing, I would get really bored, which is okay, by the way, because some people love focusing on one thing. But I'm still trying to figure out what that thing is for me. And I'm getting clear, but I'm getting clear based off of my lived experiences. So for me, some of these, what people might perceive as side hustles, are really experiments. They're me experimenting with, is this something that I want to do? And trying it. And just like the innovation process, sometimes saying, what did I learn from this? And I learned that I didn't like it. Sometimes I learn I could like this, but maybe it needs to be tweaked. Or sometimes I learn this is the direction that I want to go in.
And you touched upon a very interesting topic around change, that, and we had this conversation prior to starting the podcast, that it feels like that there's a lot more change happening. The speed of change is accelerating. At least that's my feel in the past 2-3 years. Do you feel the same? And how could somebody learn to navigate in a fast-paced world?
So it's interesting. Have you heard of the premise of polarities, that there's two sides to everything?
Actually, I learned that from you 3 years ago.
Okay. Well, so I've been thinking about this, is that I think it feels like change is happening faster than it's ever happened before. And part of it is because there's so much information coming to us. Yet on the other side of it, I also believe that change is a moment versus what actually happens before a change happens is transitions, and it's a bit of a process. And I think that actually takes a really long time. And there's an analogy that I use quite often, which is around the bamboo. If you were to walk by a farmer's field, a bamboo farmer's field, you'd probably see him watering dirt. And you might wonder, what is he doing? Like, why is that guy watering dirt? Or a woman. And you'd look at them and be like, okay, that's unusual. And then a year later, you might go by the same spot and you might see the same person watering dirt. And you'd be thinking, why are they watering dirt? And what is interesting about bamboo is that bamboo doesn't sprout for 3 to 5 years. So somebody might be watering dirt for a long time, which means that they're planting the seeds, they're growing the roots, they're building the water system underneath. But then in that moment where bamboo does start to grow, it grows like 30 to 80 feet within a matter of weeks. So it really sprouts up. And I kind of think that change or transitions is the same way, that we plant little seeds and we try things, but they actually might not manifest in our lives, in our work, or in our personal lives for some time. And I think that's why we think change is so difficult. But at the same time, I think where we feel like change is happening really quickly is because of technology and because so much information is coming at us.
Yeah, I was reading now that I'm not sure I shared with you, Sam. We're working on a new book that's called Perform in Times of Crisis, which is a sequel of the first book, Perform. But now we're investigating what leaders, especially business leaders, do to navigate uncertainty and urgent crisis situations. And on the topic of change, I read somewhere, and I'm definitely not an expert in these type of areas of, you know, science and brain and so on, but that we as human beings, we are always seeking certainty, security, stability. Actually, our brain is saving energy when you have things in place. So it's not human to go for change and uncertainty. Actually, it's against our nature.
Completely. And it is and it isn't against our nature.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of times when we're thinking about when we say change, and if you ask somebody what they think about change, a lot of times they'll be like, I love change. Well, it's because they like change because in their heads, change is meant to be positive. And the intent is to make things better, maybe make it easier, also make it a fast track to success, right? But part of the reason that we actually might resist change and what you're talking about is when you think about our world, we want to know what's in our control and we like making sense of things. What ends up happening in our brains is like the amygdala, it goes back into like the, you know, way back into the caveman days and has that reaction of fear when change happens to us that we're not anticipating. So we have those moments where we're actually going to this fight or flight. And that's why I think a lot of times when technology, and it's not just specifically technology, but when things are coming at us quickly that we don't understand or we haven't had the chance to process yet, we go into fight or flight mode. And because of the availability to get information so quickly, it happens to a lot. Like it happens to us all the time. We get an email from somebody that throws us off. You know, that wasn't in our day. We've planned our days. We've got our calendars. We have it. You know, I'm going to have this meeting with Stoyan. And then afterwards, I'm going to go to the board meeting. And then I'm going to go volunteer at the, at the food bank. But in between there, something might pop up that I wasn't anticipating. And that's going to send me into my flight or flight mode. So I think that's a change. And even though it's not a big change, it's one that I wasn't ready for or one that I wasn't anticipating.
I'm curious, in your master's degree or was it an MBA?
I was a master's of change.
Master's of change.
Now I'm doing a DBA, which is a doctorate of business administration.
That's there you go.
Confusing.
Yeah. I wonder what, you know, now that maybe you can reflect back, what was some maybe frameworks or example, something that you learn about change that was for you, that's an interesting perspective.
I love that you brought that up because probably I'm going to say two things. Is one of the biggest, the framework that I reference a lot is Bridges' model of transitions. And it's something that I use quite often in my work and something I learned while I was at INSEAD as well. But Bridges' model of transitions is all about the fact that, first of all, change is not a moment. Change is something that happens over time, which is actually the transitions. But it's also how can you think about change and be prepared for it and help people through it? So William Bridges was a consultant. And what he discovered is that to help people with change, and we know this, is we need to actually be able to communicate in an effective way. But more importantly, what he did is he identified there's three stages of transition. And if you can use this as a business leader or even personally to understand where you are in a change, it can help you get through that at an accelerated pace. Now there's this curve. I don't have it right now, but I can share it with everybody afterwards. My friend Florence had shared it with me just around the change model, around how when you start with the change, you dip down and you kind of then come back up at some point. And the reality is that's always going to happen. Because when you're going through change, the first stage is really you need to let go. You need to let go of what the past was. And even if it's positive, you're still letting go of something because there's going to be a new future. Then there's this whole middle stage, which is kind of this neutral area, this in-between, which is where you're dancing back and forth between the past and the future. And then there's this whole new area, which is called new beginnings. So it's kind of that third stage of transition where you're really excited and you're in the zone and you're ready for the change. We all go through this. And it doesn't matter whether it happens within the matter of minutes, whether it happens over days, months, years, but we all go through this. And when individuals, when teams, when organizations are going through change, everybody is actually going through these patterns. And the interesting part is if you're a leader running an organization is recognizing that everybody is going through this and not everybody might be at the same place. So I'd say Bridges' model of transitions is probably the one of the best models out there that I think there is to manage change.
This is such a comforting model as well.
It doesn't feel better. I'm not the only one.
No, the thing is like, if you are aware and actually accept that in the next few weeks, months, whatever, we are choosing to go through a change, which means that most likely we are first going to dip and drop, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Some of you might be a little tired. Yeah. It kind of, I think it's the topic of acceptance, right? Once you accept the reality, it's not so heavy anymore.
Yeah, and I think there's a few things that you can kind of think about. Is first of all, when you start at that beginning stage, of I'm going to call it the neutral stage, right? Or that ending, losing, and letting go. So when you first find out that something's happening, you're going to realize that you're probably uncomfortable because, or, and even again, if it's something you want, there's always this moment where something that you're doing or have in your life is being replaced with something new. And there will always be an emotional reaction in that moment, no matter what. But we need to understand ourselves that that's okay. We're in that moment. We have some emotions and recognize the emotions that you're feeling. But also like recognize that in other people too. Because we might be afraid. We could be totally in denial. There might be anger. We could be sad. There might be some frustration. But no matter what, there is some type of sense of loss. And that is totally okay. But we also have to realize that there is going to be some point in time where we're going to move into this neutral zone where we still might not be fully comfortable with what's happening and the change and moving forward. But we know that it's going to happen. So kind of that reality to your point has set in around, okay, you know what? I know that this is happening and I know that this is going to impact me. And you might still be kind of resistant. And I'm going to say in those moments of resistance, you might still be feeling a little bit lower energy. There might still be some anxiousness. Also, I know for me personally, there's times where I feel a little bit skeptical or I'm challenging things. And I'm like, I don't know how that's possible or how we're going to do that. Or I ask lots of questions. And this can be a point where you're either frustrated or if you're working with individuals or teams, they're frustrated too. But you can start to think about like, hey, what is it about the future that you can plant seeds around the possibility? How can you encourage yourself? How can you encourage others? And how can you remind yourself or even your teams of where you want to go to help to move them into that final stage where they have the new beginnings? But you're right. We all go through it.
And I love that you're bringing the leadership perspective into it. Because I guess in these times, I mean, for some businesses, probably 2023 is smooth and they're growing. But if we look into the world as a whole and just look into the past 3-4 years, it's a lot more volatile, right? Like it could be that it's going upwards. It could be going downwards. But the movements are so much more frequent with the different global events happening. And, you know, 2023, global recession, many big organizations are cutting off stuff, if we look into the tech sector, let's say, right, that affects and creates a ripple effect. We had the Silicon Valley Bank situation recently, a lot of fear and uncertainty coming out of there. And also, so it's more like, what would be your advice to leaders out there who are probably not used to navigating change, who have probably been working in organizations in a more stable pace?
Well, we're living in, I'm sure you've heard this term before, a VUCA world, right? Volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And one of the things that I think is fascinating is, you're right, there's a lot of spikes and things are moving faster than they ever have, but also there's a lot that we don't know. Like, and what I mean by that is, if you look back like 5, 10, 15 years ago, you could easily look back over past trends of the last like 5, 10, 20 years and apply that to your future. We no longer can do that because we don't actually know what 6 months is going to look like. We don't know what a year is going to look like because past trends can't predict the future. They might give us an indication, but they're no longer predictors. So we have that challenge. Then on top of it, you know, business leaders are facing a lot of challenges from an economic perspective, an environmental perspective, a political perspective. And when you're asking around what leaders can do is, I'm going to go back to the beginning of the conversation where you asked what's in my mind as well as what's in my body. And I think as a lot of times as leaders, we focus on productivity, which is not a bad thing, but we have this bias for action, which means that we're always constantly looking at doing. And what we sometimes don't spend enough time in is actually pausing and starting with an understanding ourselves. And there's a movement right now, which I know this sounds really broad, but two things is one, like when going back to change isn't just a process. It's actually psychological as well. Like it's happening in all levels of us as individuals and collectively. And a lot of times we look at the output versus, you know, what's actually going on below the surface or below kind of that iceberg in that water to understand, like from a psychological perspective, what are the dynamics that are actually happening? And the reason I'm bringing this up is because in order to understand that as a leader and understand complex systems, you first need to understand with yourself. And I've believed this for a long time that it all starts with understanding of self. Because that, again, allows you to understand relationships to others, impact in the world, relationship with the world, teams, organizations, you name it. But there's actually quite a bit of research that's been done on this over the last few years. And there's some great tools out there. Like there's the Inner Development Toolkit, which I'd highly recommend people check out. It's specifically focused to help people develop their inner capacity. And it's everything from compassion to empathy to understanding collaboration. But it's similar tools that I think are needed for leaders to be able to operate in a complex world. Because there needs to be a shift from what is considered a socialized mindset into more of a transformative mindset and understanding the multiple possibilities. But again, you can't do any of that without actually first knowing who you are. So it sounds really simple, but we don't take the time. Like a really simple question that I like to ask people sometimes is, what are your values? Mm. And people, a lot of times are like, well, I think they're, and then they're like, oh, actually, I don't know. Or even, what are your strengths? What are your passions? And I know that sounds really simple, but starting with even understanding what navigates you and what's important to you is a really, it's something that we intrinsically think that we know, but we never spend any time on. And I see that in all areas of the business and all areas of business is that there's a lot that we take for granted because we're focused on productivity and output. And we've forgotten in some ways about the people and the human behind it, because organizations, yes, they're systems and their structures, but organizations are actually social structures. Like they literally are social structures, regardless of whether it's two people or, you know, 6 million people. And we sometimes forget that. And I think that's leaders' biggest opportunity is to go back to those skills around relating to people.
I'm so happy you brought that to the conversation. Sure. Literally, our purpose statement or mission statement is empowering workplace culture of productivity and care.
Yeah.
This is what we're excited about. Like in productivity is not just system efficiency, you know, structure is very important. It's also the social structure needs to be put into consideration, right? Like it's humans. Like how do we take care of the humans that are part of these organizations. And the other part, the other piece that you kind of brought, which I think is really relevant, is when a crisis happens, when change is happening, that is not the time to go and be self-aware and look into who you are. Like, I mean, it's much harder when things are, when the house is burning to take care of your personal development, right?
Yes. And actually, if you've already done that, then you're ready for a crisis. And I think I've shared this with you before. Actually, I know that I have. I literally have on my chalkboard my values, my purpose, and my principles for living my life. So in those times where I'm really struggling, which does happen quite a bit, actually, where I'm like, I don't know what to do or where to go. I literally go to my wall and I'm like, okay, you know what? I have said these are the principles that I want to live my life by. These are my values and this is my purpose. And how does that align? And, you know, it's interesting. And I was just looking for some data because I was doing some research the other day on purpose and why it is so important. But if you look at it individually, there's research that suggests that if you have a sense of your purpose, which to me, purpose can be understanding your values and how those show up in your life as well. But if you do, you have a 22% decreased risk of having a stroke. So your heart's in better condition. There, apparently, if you're a student, you're more apt to try harder in your classes. If you are somebody who is in a work environment, you give more of your work because purpose equals meaning, which also means resilience to your point around crisis. But the part that I thought was really interesting is there's an HBR study on this where people who worked for a leader that they thought had a clear purpose were 70% more satisfied in their work. They were 56% more engaged. And they were 100% more likely to stay. But what's interesting is when you start to take it to that meta level, which is the organization and the organization being clear on their purpose and the leaders of the organization being clear on their purpose, there's higher engagement of employees. I think it's by 1.4 times more engaged. They're 1.7 times happier. And organizational transformation, so in those times of crisis, are 5 times more likely to succeed.
Five times.
And which I think is super fascinating is Deloitte did a study on purpose-driven organizations and their investment patterns. And if organizations have a clear purpose and purpose-led leaders, new technology has a 38% success rate of implementation versus in other organizations only 19%. New market entry is at 31% versus 21% of companies that don't have a purpose. And new products and services is 27% success rate versus 17% success rate. And employee development and training, it has a 25% rate versus an 11%. So basically, purpose-driven organizations and individuals can be more aggressive with their strategic bets because they're more successful.
Yeah,
so that to me is fascinating.
If something happens and an organization goes through a crisis, if people are in, if you take care of the people, if there's a really clear purpose, where are we going? What is the mission? And we are all a team. And of course, everybody will come together. Of course, people will be like, you know what? It's a hard, difficult time, but we will stick together. We will be with you, even in these difficult times. Let's go and let's figure it out. They're a lot more likely to do it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, on a personal level, we know it. We read all these books. I don't know if you read the book called Man's Search for Meaning. I don't know if you read
that one. No, I'll have to add that to my list.
You should definitely read that one. It's this guy, Viktor Frankl, who was a survivor of the Nazi concentration camps.
Yes. Psychologist. I know of it. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a psychologist and he was using the tools sort of like he had this purpose, like, I need to leave so I can potentially see my wife.
Yes.
That was his purpose. He's like, I need to live another day. That's my mission. Because everybody who didn't have a purpose, he shares in the book, they just gave up. Because we were hard, but he had a purpose.
Completely. And purpose is different than vision or high hopes or unrealistic aspirations. It's your personal reason for being. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because there was also the, I can't remember his name, but he was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. And he actually got out of prison where a lot of people didn't, they died. And when you look at why he actually was able to stay alive and get out versus his counterparts, is he was more realistic in his expectations, where he believed that one day he would be released, but he never set a date to it, versus other people kept setting dates where they'd be like, okay, in the spring or in the fall, or, and they were constantly being let down. So there's an element of, you need to have belief, but you need to be realistic in terms of there's some things that you may not know. But I do think if you have that purpose attached to it as well, around, I want to see my wife, that's your reason for being. And by the way, purpose doesn't have to be complex. It can be, and I did in my master's, I talked to, I think, about 70 different leaders. And what I was trying to understand is, why do some leaders decide to make organizational shifts and changes to have a bigger impact in the world? But one of the things that I discovered in my research was everybody that's been able to lead some sort of change. And there was lots of different types of examples of change that they led. But the one common element was they all had a clear purpose. And I'm going to say some purposes were as simple as to be of service to others, to others having really big aspirations of getting everybody in the world moving. You know, there's, and so it can be a wide spectrum, but it's, what is your reason for being, and what is your reason to get out of bed in the morning? And also, what is the impact that you're having? What are you doing on a daily basis?
Reminds me, we had a guest at a podcast. Her name is Lubomila Yordanova. She's a founder, CEO of a company called Plan A for the Planet. So what they do is they're helping primarily, I think, large organizations to track their emissions, like how many and how things are, like, I don't even know exactly how they support organizations with that. But if you think about her, she would never talk about the product. She would never talk about, we have this fastest features, like, no, you see her everywhere. She just goes and she's like, this is an important thing. Everybody is there, right? Like, we need to combat climate change. We need to come together. She goes to conferences, she talks to people, she makes alliances. Like, and then we had a conversation, right? And I'm like, you guys are growing crazy, right? Like, how do you manage to attract top talent with such a high speed? And her answer was, we don't have to. We have a huge list of people that we have a huge waiting list of top people who are so excited about what we do, believe in the mission that we believe in, that we don't have to look for talent.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, purpose.
You know, what's triggered in my mind, and it's interesting because I've been also having some conversations around what is needed for leadership and for purpose-based organizations. And for purpose-based organizations, to me, can be NGOs, they can be charities, but they can also be like large organizations like the Patagonias of the world, right? That are having an impact in the world. As you're talking to me about Plan A for the Planet, what just comes to mind is one of the things, just back to your leadership question and change, what I also think is really important for leaders is not just to understand themselves, but to understand the people that work for them and invest in them and invest for their development. Because I think in some corporate worlds, it's taken for granted that there's leadership development and leadership support. But when I think about a lot of for-purpose organizations, they're really good at attracting people. But one of the biggest challenges that they face is retention and burnout. Because of the fact that there is so much change and that they don't have the capabilities to deal with that. So I was just thinking about the other side of that as you were speaking about it. It was like, yes, there is this, okay, because we're clear on our purpose and our values, this attraction, but then how do you keep that attraction, that momentum?
I think this is exactly what we're discussing, right? It's the yin and the yang, right? Like you can't just have the one type of energy, or like, you know, if we talk about productivity, structure, results on the one side, and then you have care, soft topics, impact, purpose, feelings on the other side, you need to find a fair balance in a way in between both, right?
I'm actually just what I'm visualizing in my head right now is some of the frameworks for productivity, you know, whether you look at Covey or there's a number that are out there, right? And there's all these frameworks that you can think about, like how do I manage productivity and how do I manage stress? But I was also thinking on the other side of that, what are those things that you do to make sure that you have the right type of rest? So you also have that right space to be able to, like, I was just thinking about the two sides of that. Because you've probably seen a lot of that too. Like the, you know, there's all these great frameworks for like output and productivity, but then also what can you implement in your life that brings that balance where you have the right types of rest and the right space to be able to have that other side of the equation.
Yeah, there was a really good framework by talking about frameworks. We both love frameworks. and if you guys get a copy of our book, you know what I'm talking about. It's like frameworks, example stories. but there is, actually, I included that one in the book as well, a framework by Tony Schwartz, The Energy Project.
Yeah.
And he's looking into energy into these two dimensions, from low to high and from negative to positive, and looking at these four quadrants. I think he calls them the energy quadrants. And of course, everybody wants to be in the high energy coming from a positive place, right? Like that's the performance zone.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to be there. The challenge is if you're constantly in the performance zone, you're slowly going into the, I think it's a high energy that's coming from a negative place. So that means you can be drinking a lot of coffee, adrenaline, you know, like do all those kind of things, but maybe not sleeping enough, but hey, you're excited, you go, you get into this cycle, and I think he calls it the survival mode, survival zone. And then you go, I'm actually speaking just from my head, so hopefully, Tony Schwartz, if you're listening,
I apologize. I love it.
But it's, I think that the bottom one, bottom left is like, it's the burnout zone, right? Where low energy from a negative place, you get into, if you're too much into the performance zone, and you're slowly getting into the survival zone, and you end up into the burnout zone, which is a really bad place to be. The fourth zone is actually, it's the positive energy, like, I think it's low energy coming from a positive place or something. So you're kind of in low energy, but that's the renewal zone, right? Like you completely shut down. And what he's saying, and I'm not sure you guys can imagine the framework, but what he's saying is, as human beings, we work in cycles in order to be productive.
Yes.
You're fully intense and focused, get things done, results, and then you rest.
Yes. So there's actually another thing that you can think about too, which actually goes back to that part that you were talking about crisis. And it's, I love the Tony Schwartz model, but there's also, it's Kelly, what's her name? She's from Stanford. But she talks about stress
and eustress. If you're listening.
Yeah. If you're listening, the eustress, stress and performance parabola.
Okay.
Do you want me to show it quickly? Would that be helpful?
Yeah, go ahead.
I actually, at my work with Think, we actually have, we've used this several times. Mm-hmm. And let me share the screen. No, I have no slides. My computer. Okay, never mind. That is not working properly.
That's all right. You can explain it.
It's basically this, if you can imagine drawing a U or a mountain, is that when you start at the bottom, and it goes back to the kind of that quadrant that you're talking about, is performance level and also energy or increased stress. So you've kind of got this 2x2. And when you start to look at the bottom part, when you're at your lowest performance or your lowest point of stress, you might actually be bored, right? And as you start to go up that curve, you might be kind of be underachieving, but you're still at least doing something. Then you get to that stimulated place. Then you become more creative. Then you become really energetic. And then you hit this place that's kind of your peak performance. So that's what you're talking about, really, is that place where you're in your optimal performance. You're feeling good. You're delivering. You're like, you're at your best. But what can happen is there's triggers that could happen that push you into what's called de-stress. Mm-hmm. And when it's too much, it becomes, if you don't have that rest, you get a little bit fatigued. But then you just start to slide down the curve. You start to get distracted. You might become exhausted. You might reach a point where you're really disoriented and you don't know the path forward. But then ultimately that bottom part is the breakdown piece. So it's where you've gone kind of from that like zero to like 10. So it's about energy, but it's also, this happens with the energy to your point around stress as well, like in crisis. So when you're having those times, so to me, the answer becomes, how do you recognize when you're in those moments where you're getting the eustress, but also what are those things that you're doing to balance out your energy and to balance yourselves out so you don't go into that point of de-stress?
Beautiful. By the way, I might be able to share the screen. I have the graph. We included exactly that specific.
I love it.
Let me just go there. I have it open. So those of you who are watching, you might be able to see it. The rest of you need to go to YouTube, I guess. So this is the... That's the one, right?
Yeah, the stress curve. Yep. It's mine looks slightly different, but it's very similar. Yeah.
Yeah, that one we use the brand colors of Perform. So, you know, we can fit it into the book. But beautiful. But this is what Sam was talking about, right? Like actually the optimal amount of stress, the optimal amount of performance is not when you have zero stress at all. I mean, that's why we set deadlines, we set goals, we're ambitious, because that triggers us to perform and to get results. The problem is if we stay too much into excessive stress, that's not really a good place to be. Yeah, so completely. Let me get back here there. Hope you guys enjoyed this little presentation. but
love the branding, you know, by the way.
You know what comes from something that came to mind regarding navigating stress and managing stress. Sam, you know my background is in movie production, video production.
Yes.
And I was a producer, sometimes first AD. For those of you who are not aware what that means, is I would be the person on set who's taking care of everything, and I'm the firefighter as well, right? If everybody needs to, we have this, I don't know, usually we're always behind time, behind budget, behind money, and we need to produce something, and we need to take this several scenes and shots, and I've broken everything down into 10-minute chunks, everything, right? But something breaks, right? The lights break, the smoke machine, somebody gets sick, like something happens, right? So you're constantly firefighting, and I was used to this. And one of the learnings for me was you can't be there to firefight if you're not in a good place yourself.
Yes, it's kind of like on the when you're on an airplane and they say do not put the mask on, you know, if the plane's basically going down and there's limited capacity of oxygen, don't put the mask on somebody else before you put the mask on yourself.
No, but that's right. Yeah. Like so the first thing you should do as a leader, and it doesn't matter if you're executive or your employee that doesn't manage anybody, you still can be a leader and show up as a leader, is to make sure that you're in a good mental state. Yeah. And that, you know, in situations like a pandemic, or I mean, I don't know what was for you last year, but the war in Ukraine started, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta tell you, the first day I was like, I'm not near to Ukraine, right? And for me, it was like, oh my God, you know, I was so stressed, I couldn't do anything, like anything. And, you know, but it's like, well, am I the most useful to my friends that are maybe affected in one way or another if I'm completely frozen, right? How can I help or take care of myself? What can I do completely. Now, right?
Yeah.
Like... And this is something, I don't know, in the pandemic, everybody was fighting, should we have vaccine or not vaccine? And it's like, how about we talk about, you need to exercise, you need to get some coaching, you need to eat well, you need to drink a lot of water, you need to have good conversations with cool people, get some hugs, like, you know, like we didn't talk about that at all, right? It was all about vaccine versus no vaccine. Like, well, there are certain things you can do to take care of yourself. So when there's difficult times coming, you can actually lead people. You can help people.
And that's really important from a resilience piece, not just during the time that it's happening, but also afterwards. Because I think what happened for a lot of people is people didn't look after themselves. So they were constantly faced with the stress. So once everything was done, and we can now see that, we can see the impact that, you know, COVID has, or people like being locked in their houses, at least in Canada, for a longer period of time, how it's impacted people from a mental health perspective.
Last year, I think there were some studies, I can't refer to the exact studies, but showing that, and it was specifically 2022, I think, that the mental health issues have risen to record highs, probably based on everything that happens the 2 years before that, all the change, all the uncertainty, should we be working from home, hybrid models, recession, like all kind of things like that, right? And people not being able to, not having the tool set. How do we navigate these things, right? Yeah. But I want to get back to what you said at the beginning. You talk about this framework of change that, you know, is dipping down closely after. And I don't know if you remember, we probably had these conversations before, but again, I come from movie production. And when we are constructing a compelling story, many stories in a movie are usually they start with, they introduce you to a character and something bad happens, right?
They get
faced with a challenge. You know, somebody get abducted, like something happens, something that they want, they cannot have it, which triggers them to go on a journey to potentially figure out who they are, either figure out who they are, or they already have a goal. Like, I need to step up. Maybe I don't know what to do, but I need to step up so I can actually resolve this thing, which on the way, actually many, many stories, the characters realize somewhere down the story that's not what they're looking for.
Completely. It's the elixir. They try the elixir and they realize it's not it, and they end up going all the way home. It's the hero's journey, right?
That's it. That's it. But you know what helps me in difficult times, Sam? It's more like the metaphor. I ask myself, how do I act from a place of strength? How do I act from a place of the main character? Not like the extra or the victim character that dies in the first scene, right? Like, I want to be the main character. What does that mean? Main character is usually being put into pressure challenges so they can grow. So if I'm feeling like, oh my God, I don't know what to do, it's like, that's fine. That's part of my journey. I'm just in the, you know, as you said, in the framework, I'm just down in the hole right now, which means there's only way forward. Or maybe there's a little bit more down before I go forward. But in a long-term perspective, and it's all about perspective. At the beginning, you talk about leaders who are painting a vision 2 years in the future, 5 years in the future. It's like, hey, guys, it's going to be hard. The next months are going to be really hard. But I'll tell you what, if we stick together, this is what can come out of it. Let me tell you what the opportunities are. It's this and that and that.
Yeah, I also think on that, and just on the leadership piece, what's popping to my mind is two things. Is one, I keep thinking about growth mindset, because I love the way that you frame it. And I will do that the next time I'm going through a challenging time. But I also try to look at it from the perspective of, do you apply to innovation? I say that you apply to innovation. And it's that, what am I learning from this? And we do that a lot of times in business, where I think we look at the good or the bad, but what the question should actually be is, what are we learning from this? But what that brings to mind for me from a leadership perspective is, how can leaders also be better coaches? So rather than telling or advising their teams, is actually, how do you tap into the learnings that people have and ask them, what are you learning from this? Because as you're talking about those moments of crisis, to me, my friend Geronimo always says, you need to break down to break through. And it's true, where growth comes from. There's a model that's used in vertical development theories, which is, you need three elements to be present in order to really shift your mind. So it's not about what you think, it's about how you think. And in order to change that, you need to have some sort of heat experience where you get really uncomfortable. But if you have that alone by itself, so even if you tell yourself that you're the character in the movie and you know you're going to get through this, that doesn't mean any change is going to happen for you as an individual, a team, or an organization, unless you do two other things. you need to have reflection. So you actually need to have some space to be able to digest what's happened, what you've learned from the situation. And you also need to have different perspectives and colliding perspectives. So you can't simply just have your point of view. You actually need to bring in different points of view. And whether the, and that's, to me, is actually relevant for a person, a leader, a team, or an organization.
In a team, would you mean in bringing more people from the team internally, or you also mean let's actually invite some people externally too?
Oh, I think bring external people in too. I really think we operate in these worlds, like these bubbles, and it's all the information around us. We have all these biases, right? We have confirmation bias. And if it's the people that we're always working with or that know things really well, we're not going to bring any different perspectives.
You know what visual came to mind when you were talking about this? I'm just like imagining I have like this treasure sitting at the corner of the room, and we are just fighting about how can we survive. And then you come in the room and it's like, what about this treasure, guys? What do you mean treasure?
Yeah.
That is this treasure at the corner. Oh, we never thought about that.
Completely. And that's where like real growth comes from. Growth personally, but also from a product perspective or from a marketing perspective or from a business perspective.
And I think that's one of the hard things is to, you mentioned one really good question. What are the learnings? And I think another good question, what are the opportunities that will come out of this mess or chaos or change?
Yeah. What if it's thinking about all of the possibilities that you possibly can?
Yeah, you can go crazy. Sometimes you go super crazy with some super crazy ideas, and based on brainstorming with the team or bringing some external perspectives, you come down with these two ideas. It's like, wow, this is incredible. I think Simon Sinek was talking about this example during the pandemic, about this pizza place. And they were selling pizza, pieces of pizza, right? Like,
yeah.
So all of a sudden, nobody can go. I think it was in New York or something. And then they figure out that they can actually use their ovens to do, I'm not sure exactly was it, but it was something like paint, or like they completely pivoted using the resources that they have, the assets to deliver value for business so they can survive. And potentially when things come better, they can come back to the core of what they want to do. Right. So, but you wouldn't think that, right? If you don't stop and say, hey guys, all right, crazy stuff is happening. We can't operate the way we operate. Let's breathe and let's see what's out there. What are the opportunities that will lead us to a place where, first of all, we survive if it's very difficult. But then secondly, we can actually be in a way better place in 6 months or 12 months.
Yeah. And what I wonder is, just on that example, is to me that's change, and that's embracing change. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how we can make that not just the new normal because it's happening to us externally, but also because we want that to happen. Because what I always find fascinating is, whether it's personally or whether it's as an organization, a lot of times when we reflect or we do things differently is in moments of crisis. But what if we just became so comfortable with, wow, I constantly want to be learning and growing and changing and developing, and not just me, but my business. So that means we need to be in this constant state of experimentation, this constant state of learning, this constant state of agility and emergence. I wonder what that would do and if that might shift things. Because I wonder if it, rather than it being about moment after moment of crisis, what if it became just moment and moment of change? Hmm. What could potentially emerge?
What if we change the lens? What if we change the perspective and see things from a different angle? Awesome. Sam, so cool. I told you that the 60 minutes is going to be like...
I know, it totally flew by. Thank you.
Amazing. So first of all, I want to say, everyone who's been with us and listening, thank you so much. Make sure to leave a comment. If you want, connect with us, let us know what you think about the episode. Make sure to share it with a friend or more friends, with your grandmother, you name it. But just to give you the space to share some, because I'm sure many people would be interested to maybe get in touch or even have you as a partner? Have you as an external partner that can maybe help organizations? Can you maybe give more like specific sort of like a overview of how can you support organizations with the work that you do?
Yeah, well, specifically what I've been doing a lot of work on is team journeys and organizational change, is looking at organizations that want to make, I'm going to say, significant transformations or shifts in either their approach to the way that they think. So maybe thinking a little bit more from a growth mindset or from an innovation perspective, or just actually, you know, reinventing the business model, to just, we want better leaders. How can you help our people become better leaders?
Love it. And from somebody who's been part of your sessions, I got to say, you got to get Sam on board. He's a kick-ass moderator, amazing energy, so much experience. So highly recommend Sam. Get in touch with her. Where could people find you, Sam?
I'm on LinkedIn. Just look at me and Samantha Yarwood. And even reach out for questions or coffee. Always happy to have a virtual coffee.
One of the best connectors that I know, by the way. Sam, thank you so much for connecting with so many amazing people. amazing. Well, thanks so much, everybody. Make sure to subscribe to Productivity Mastery on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and all other major platforms. We'll keep on bringing you amazing people like Samantha Yarwood, hopefully inspire you, give you a little bit of tools, ideas, stories to have your day more positive and help you on your journey, on their own journey, as the hero of their own movies. So thanks so much, and see you again at the next episode.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter by visiting stoyanyankov.com, and also learn about the Perform methodology and the Perform book, as well as our various personal and team coaching offers. Stay tuned and keep performing.